Testing, testing. Okay. Okay, so good to see everyone tonight. Thanks for coming to Thrive. So some housekeeping before we get started. On our last kind of lesson in this series, we are having a change of time, day, and location. Time, day, and location. So instead of meeting at the church at 7 p.m. on Fridays, we are inviting everyone over to our house every Tuesday at 6:30. We will provide dinner. And it'll be a time where one that there's a few reasons for this. It will not be next week. We'll still be here next week. Okay. The first day will be when's Odyssey Day? The sixth?
Yes.
Whatever that Tuesday is. So I guess that's the eighth. That'll be the first time we meet at our house. Just pragmatically, everybody eating dinner anyway. Like some of like we're either like. I was eating a protein shake as I was over here. It's like, well, why don't we just do this together? Eating is great. Also, I think that as we look to the Bay and what God wants to do in having his name be glorified here in the Bay and people who are uninitiated with Christianity, I think it's an easier sell to say, come to Tuesday night. Then come to Friday night. So that was another one of the motivations. Another one of the motivations of having over our house, we love to host and we love to have people over. We love the kind of informality that that is having it. And God has blessed us with a house that is easy to host. So we want to do that. It also allows my wife to be involved and she really wants to be involved. But the kiddos, I tried to talk her in. She's like, give them some bread and water and just come on here on Fridays. And she thought about it and then said no. So anyway, so I'll send out an announcement about that. The way we'll do dinner is, you don't need to know all the details right now, I guess, but we'll ask for a small, like $5, and we'll provide the dinner and. I don't know how we're going to do that yet. Like, either just get takeout or tacos or something, or we'll make it. My wife loves to cook. She's a great cook. But we'll ask for just a bowl. You do not have to pay, and you can always eat. Okay. And especially for people who have never been, that'll never be expected. But even if you can't do that, you can still eat just to kind of take some of the costs. And then it's pretty close to here. It's about 7 minutes away. Now, why is it at 6:30? I know that's contentious. It's hard to get here for some of us. We won't ever start content before 7, usually 7:15, and then we'll have time to hang out afterwards as well. Any time or day that I picked, there was going to be a compromise, but. That will be starting on September 8th. We're really excited about that. Next week, we'll meet here, same time, same location. We will be finished with Bible and Technology. The series ends tonight. Some of you are thinking, thank God. And we're going to do a prayer night. So I'll tell you more about that later, but we're going to pray for our city, both people in our lives that need to hear Jesus. Going to pray for us because we need to be rooted in the gospel every day as Christians, but also to have kind of a theological vision for Silicon Valley. There's no part of the world that God does not call mine, including Silicon Valley. So we're going to pray for that. And then the following week, we'll have the Sunday thing for a few of us who are going to the Odyssey, and then we'll meet on the Tuesday. Any questions or about that? Okay. So let me pass out our handout. We're looking at the last. Oh, almost lost my sherbet. Thank you. All right. That would have been bad. God would have kept me humble with sherbet all over my backside. We've been looking at what the Bible says about technology, especially how we're supposed to live in a technological age. Okay. So whether we are part of directly the industry, a technological industry, and we're contributing to it through software or hardware, or we're in an industry that is not connected directly to it or not, we're all affected. One, because we live in this area, but even if we lived in the center of the Midwest, even if you lived in Central Africa, cell phones and satellites and semiconductors have infiltrated almost every corner of the world. And I'm less, I want to, I focus less on what is the reach of copper, silicon, and titanium, and how has the technological age changed the very way we've thought about us and the world? And I've been pretty theoretical. It's kind of my bent. I like to think ideas, and ideas have consequences. But I thought it would be good tonight to talk about some practices of how we can approach, not necessarily our vocations, but the world in which we live that have some inflection points on technology. And then two particular areas that I could have picked from a whole library, but two particular areas of now, how do we take this and apply it to how you and I relate to our smartphone and relate to conversational AI? And I wanted to get very like basic and like, given these theological truths, what are we supposed to do with these two things that are so prevalent in our life? So that's where we're headed tonight. So I want to start with something that all humans need. We're going to get to Job 28 in a moment. I'll tell you when we turn there. And that is wisdom. Now, wisdom is not often used as a term, but whenever you're in a difficult time in life, every human realizes his or her need of wisdom. Because when you're faced with a situation that you are not wise enough to address, you reach out to get wisdom. Usually, this is going to be in the form of some type of confidant. You have a difficult situation, either at work or in your personal life. It's beyond what you can like kind of figure out. And so you seek out help. And usually these people have more experience than you. Because you and I both know, and this is a truth of human experience, that wisdom comes with experience. Now, you and I both know plenty of old, foolish, dumb people. Okay. But there's a general trend that with more experience, you can't like get along in life without some kind of wisdom about how to deal with life. Now, what is wisdom? We could have a whole series on that. Wisdom is a kind of competency, a kind of way to live life well. It's not just knowledge. It has to have knowledge, but it's not just knowledge. It's like knowing how reality really is. This is the way relationships really work. This is the way asking for a raise really works. Do not step on this landmine when you go and do your taxes or when you're thinking about marriage or whatever the domain is. It's not just knowing, but it's also doing. And those are kind of connected. And we kind of recognize it in people that we call wise or sages more than we kind of can put, oh, here are all the qualities that I'm searching out for the one. We just know, oh, she's wise. And when my life is falling apart, I go to her. When I have a relationship question, I go to him. And it's typically from people who have more experience than we do. The reason I show and bring up Job 28. Hey, Mark,
I'm just sneaky.
you're sneaky. Well, come on, we have more handouts. You're here for pickleball.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
I'm just gonna say hi. Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Want to say hi to you guys?
Yes. This is Mark. This is one of our elders here at Bridges, becoming a great friend too of
Well,
me. Yeah.
we're all big family, right?
Yes,
I
indeed. Indeed.
just want to say hi to you guys too.
Okay, would you like
I
some?
guess we like watching movies or something.
Yes, that's coming. That's
Okay.
coming. Yes. We do have a question though, a very serious theological question. Which is this term right here. This is very important for tonight, what we're doing tonight. How do you pronounce this term in blue right here?
Sherbet?
Sherbet?
Or sherbet? I think it's sherbet.
Well, okay,
And that's where you got from.
you may pass. You receive $200 for passing go. So you've done it. Yes, that's it. We've been debating whether it's sherbet or sherbet. So
Right now, too.
cool. So, see you, Mark. The reason I pull up Job 28 is because in this story of Job is a righteous man. He's not sinless, but he's done nothing overly wrong. Yet he's experienced great tragedy. And in this part of the story, his friends are being pretty bad friends to him. His friends are assuming that the reason why you're experiencing these difficulties in your life is because you have denied or sinned against God. And Job hasn't. And they keep on railing, saying, "Oh, you haven't realized. Let's do some deeper digging here, Job, and see what you've really done." And in this moment, so we're in chapter 28 that I've pulled up for you. I've given you the full chapter. They've been railing against him, and by this time in the story, you're like, these guys are not great friends. They don't understand. They're not listening to what Job is saying, and they don't have the full picture from God's point of view. Job then begins to speak, and he gets it. It's almost like a monologue about technology, a particular kind of technology of mining. Okay. I want to read this with you, and he's going to introduce wisdom, and I want you to follow. It's a big text, but it's God's word, and it's profitable for us. Would someone read? I don't know. We can break this up into maybe five verses each. Have a few of us read it. Thank you, brother. You can begin. When you stop, someone else brave enough can pick up, and we'll just keep on going until we get to 28.
There is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken from the earth, and copper is smelted from ore. Mortals put an end to the darkness and search out the farthest recesses for ore in the blackest. Far from human dwellings, they cut a shaft in places untouched by human feet. Far from other people, they dangle and sway. The earth from which food comes is transformed below as by fire. Lapis lazuli comes from its rocks, and its dust continues to make its support. No bird of prey knows that hidden path, no falcon's eye is seen. Proud beasts do not set foot on it, no lion prowls there. People assault the flinty rock with their hands, while they bear the roots of the rock, their eyes see all its treasure.
They search the sources of the rivers and their hidden things, but where can this? Where its understanding is. No mortal comprehends its words, it cannot be found in the words of the deep. The deep says, it is not in the sea says, it is not in the. It cannot be bought with the finest gold, nor can price be.
It cannot be bought with the gold of Ophir, with precious onyx or lapis lazuli. Neither gold nor crystal can compare with it, nor can it be had for jewels of gold. Coral and jasper are not worthy of mention. The price of wisdom is beyond their use. The topaz of Kush cannot compare with it, Where then does wisdom come from? Where does understanding dwell?
It is hidden from the eyes of everybody, concealed from the words of the self. Destruction and death, that any rumor that has reached our ears. God understands the way to it, and he alone knows where it goes. For he views the ends of the earth and sees everything. When he established the force of the wind, he measured how the waters.
When he made a decree for the rain and a path for the thunderstorm, then he looked at wisdom and appraised it. He confirmed it and tested it. And he said to the human race, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to shun evil is understanding. We live in a culture that doesn't prize wisdom as much as previous cultures, certainly biblical culture. But if we went all the way over to Greece or Rome, wisdom was the highest feature of what it meant to be a human. And whether you were in as a scholar, or you were a warrior, or you were a merchant or a peasant, you were after some kind of wisdom that allowed you to live in life. Now, I've tried to already motivate for you that even though we kind of like, you don't see like wisdom posted on billboards, right, or advertised in kind of products, we still, because we are dealing with the same kind of human life, we find ourselves going to people for wisdom, even if we don't like talk about it in the same way that ancient cultures do. And the question that Job 28 points to us is, look at this great technological marvel of mining. Why do you mine? You don't need to know anything about mining other than what we just read. Why do you mine?
For gold.
You do it for some precious metal or precious jewel, okay? So you're after something. It's a technological advancement. It takes incredible ingenuity. You don't go by the normal rhythms of the sun. You go under the earth. We're the only animal that does this, right? It's not for anything edible. We're not eating anything down there. It's for the kind of prize and marvel of these beautiful things. And we're going to the most valuable things with this technology. And he says, not even those things can buy wisdom. We need wisdom. We need wisdom to live. It's the most valuable thing in life. Yet, the things that we're after with our technology, Job is saying, cannot even purchase it for us. It doesn't even compare with rubies. Then we go and search for all the world and all of the depths and all of the heights, and we cannot find wisdom. So, and here is the question that it poses to us. Are we any wiser from all of our technological advancement? We have more knowledge. We have more command over the natural world. We can predict certain things and the trajectory of heavenly bodies or atomic particles. But for all of our machinery and all of our technological advancement, are we any wiser? And the scriptures are telling us no, because those things don't give you wisdom. They give you something good. Surely by this time in the series, you know that the scriptures are not a hater, or even that they're not suspicious per se of technology. God encourages it. God makes technology. Yet, what we see here is a kind of limiting, like, of all the good things it is. It is not evil. It is good, but it is still so limited to what is most important in life. You need wisdom in order to find meaning. And if we don't have meaning, we go insane. And wisdom is the thing we need for it. So I open up with Job 28. I've kind of gone back and forth because the scriptures go back and forth of this high appraisal, but limiting. It doesn't say technology is God, but it has such a high view of the created world and the technology that it encourages to do. But then it has all of these, but don't treat it like God, but don't seek it like wisdom, but don't think that it's going to deliver you, that it's going to be your savior, that it's going to be your hope. And the world goes one side or the other. It's either completely optimistic about it's going to do everything for us, or it is something like extreme Amishness, where it's saying it is the kind of pinnacle of evil. Okay, the Amish actually have a lot, they've thought a lot about this, and it's I think we'd do well to learn some things from them. But so in the spirit of wisdom, I wanted to go through a few framings that we can get from our a study of the scriptures on Bible and technology, and then particularly on smartphones and conversational AI. Okay, first framing. First thing that we can tie all of this together in order to be wise. As Christians, we need to make space for unnecessary innovations. Unnecessary innovations. What do I mean by that? So technology is driven often by pragmatic and very practical concerns, and that's good. Okay. We need an energy source so that we can keep warm in the winter. We would like to travel faster between these two points. How can we do that safely? And so on. But the world and life in God's creation is not simply a practical matter. When God creates out of a superabundance, that it overflows out of his goodness and beauty. And those kinds of technologies and innovations that don't only serve our practical needs, but also beauty, truth, and just plain fun, are also to be encouraged, because that's what's at the heart of the universe. At the heart of the universe is not simply a formula to be solved, but a person who out of his goodness and overflow created everything by the word of his power. And so this kind of calls for celebration of us not to be prudish, to push things and actually celebrate that it's actually really cool that each one of us can hear a copy of Mozart or Bono that 100 years ago that only the elite of the world will be able to hear, because they would have to actually go to Leipzig, or you would have to actually go to the cities where these people were playing. And now we can hear with such fidelity. Now, that's not a practical goal. That's not solving any kind of health, but it's so good. And we need to celebrate that. There is space because God is superabundant, because God overflows, for now Christians to say, you know what? On atheism, there's nothing that encourages that except whatever gives me pleasure. But on Christianity, because of what's at the center, who is God, we can celebrate and even innovate in that way. Reich, who I've used especially the most in this talk, he wrote this great book, came out last year, God, Technology, and the Christian Life. I pulled a lot of this stuff for this talk from him, but also the whole series. He says it like this. He says, for Christians, we have a higher calling. Those innovations latent in the creation are our birthright. The Creator is pleased to instruct us in what is wonderfully unnecessary, but so good and so beautiful. So that's the first framing, making space for unnecessary innovations. Two, showing patience with poisons. Innovations, because we live in an imperfect world, they all have a cost. As soon as we make a high-speed bullet train, we have new injuries and new fatalities that we never knew existed before, because people can be in the way of those trains. In order to fit more people per square mile in Manhattan, you have to have new architecture techniques and new fatalities from falling from 100 stories up. It's not just that things that we do that have good results also have casualties, but also the reverse happens. Things that we think are only bad, because this is God's world, if we let science play out, actually we find out they have good uses. For example, when germ theory was accepted, which it wasn't for, several centuries or several decades, and then we discovered bacteria, we had what possibly could bacteria do that was good? Okay. We're only starting to understand how important bacteria is for ecosystems. That it does have some, but it obviously does have some drawback. It can kill us in some cases as well. One of the examples given that Rick gives, we have a fuller picture. These often dangerous biological agents are now used in some cases in limited use for anti-aging treatments like Botox, which is a kind apparently of a bacteria. I'm obviously not a biologist, and it helps reduce migraines. So we show patients with poisons not because we're blind optimists, but because when God finished his creation on the day six, he said, it is very good. So nothing is completely fallen and nothing is completely glorified. Everything is a mixed bag. Third, we're comfortable with tech minimalism. Tech minimalism. This is not anti-tech. Because creation is always a mixed bag, tech minimalism should be trending towards the norm for those who are Christian. Especially, what do I mean by this? Technology in our current time, but this has been the case all the way back to Cain and Abel, right after Adam and Eve, steals us away from the natural world, from each other, and from God himself. This is no more clear now than it was then. We have to be sober that many innovations and technological advancements aim to progress and actually have a kind of subversive or subtle will to power, a desire for control and attention, capital, even taking over nations or whatever. Christians are the only ones that are going to say, wait, should we be doing this? We can, but should we? Okay. That has led most Christians in Christian history to always be naysayers with technology. And I've taken pains to show you right from the beginning of Genesis that the biblical position is not the naysayer, but it is cautious. Because the motives and the goals of those that are designing the software and the hardware that rule the modern world are not always for the glory of God. Can I say anything more conservative? The goals of people designing these innovations are not for Christ's kingdom to come. And so we have to expect and we have to be cautious, which is why I said earlier, I'm not convinced that the Amish way of life is what the Bible teaches, but I think we can learn more from them than we can discard from them, because they are so cautious about the things that will disrupt their family life, their communal life, and their worship. Now, I think their conclusions are ultimately more extreme, but that they're asking these questions as a community with their Bibles open, I think is something that we need to follow. Here's the subtlety that I'm trying to push back against, and we're going to get to this in conversational AI. Innovations often have this subtle motive of control. Innovations often have a subtle motive of, if you do this, you will be in more control. And often now, these same innovations are so connected, they subtly want to take control of either our attention or gain more capital or get more likes or whatever. Again, Rink says this, we don't think that way today. We don't think that way that our previous ancestors used to think, because we generally take a technological image of ourselves. We are essentially what we manipulate. We make of ourselves through the things we make and the choices we make and the patterns we make around ourselves. We forget that we are not the one in control, but we are creatures of the one in control. More than kind of the sociology and psychology and relationship stuff that people are having a field day with in conversational AI, which I think is a real thing, it's something more basic that this plays to the human desire that was all the way back in the garden, that I can actually control things like God can. And that is false. We can't. So whatever pipe dream and whatever promise of this innovation or this technological advancement says, no, but you can do more. You can control more. That is the same lie that Eve believed in the garden. Did God really say that you cannot eat from any tree of the garden? Well, he's just saying, I'm paraphrasing, he's just saying that because he's trying to keep something from you. You need to take matters into your own hands. And we've been believing that lie ever since. Okay, so those are three framings: making space for unnecessary innovations, having patience with poisons, and comfortable with tech minimalism, given the subtleties of control that are kind of baked into the technologies that are in our world. Now I want to turn to, I said two practices, there are actually three practices. Don't you want to be able to use your smartphone and not be addicted to it? I want that. It is a humbling thing. Teaching what the scriptures teach on this, and I need to hear these things too, this very week. Wouldn't it be great if you could use this great piece of technology well, mine's over there, instead of it using you? What are we supposed to do with what we've said so far? Well, I've already said that the iPhone, and indeed the innovation that came from the creators of the iPhone, that very innovation, as we saw in Isaiah 28, those innovations were inspired by the very brilliance of God. There are no innovations, there is no truth that comes from any other source because there is no other source. Yet, we have to admit that we don't use these powerful pieces of technology well, even if they are inspired by the all-providential, the all-in-control God. We also, the problem is not just that the companies and the designers want to take capture our attention. The problem is also in here, in the way that we use our technology. It's not just out there. We intentionally look at things we shouldn't. Things that we hate to admit. We pine after things that are presented on our feeds. We look more and more enraged about the things that we read and so on. So I want to give you this practical advice. For some of us, because this is an undeniable kind of piece of our experience, given our age and our time, for some of us, what this means is that we at least need a break from this thing that is always with us and always on. I'm going to give you how I have taken breaks. By the very fact that I need breaks shows you that I don't have this figured out. Otherwise, I wouldn't need any breaks. Every year for Lent, I give up. So this is when you give up something that is good and not sinful. Like if you say, oh, I'm giving up beating my wife. It's like, you should never do that. Okay. That is never okay, okay? But fasting is when you give up something that's actually good that you've treated as God, okay? So smartphone, this is something good that we can use poorly or use well, okay? What I have to do, because I have these same tendencies, is at least once a year, I have to fast from the things that absorb me on my cell phone. And what that means, I'm not saying you have to do this same thing. I'm saying that I want you to be open to this. What that means is that the thing that takes me is I read a forum, one particular forum, and I get obsessed about it. I'll check it 7, 15 times a day. And I'll read it, and it consumes my background thinking. In between saying hi to Gus and Bobby, I'm like, I wonder if someone's posted something new, and then I'll say hi. I finish a project, and then I'm like, okay, I get a reward because I've just pushed really hard. Let me get my fix. Plug it in with sports stats, plug it in with Instagram, plug it in with whatever your thing is, okay? That is so powerful on me in the background that I have to give that up for 6 weeks, almost every year. Some other things. I'm not saying this to toot my own horn. I'm just wanting to give you like practical advice. Because it's so powerful also, I have like certain kinds of blocks on my phone where I can't look at that during work hours. If I have one cookie, I want 10 cookies. I can't just have one cookie. So if I'm like, oh, I'll just look at it at lunch. It's like, well, where did that 45 minutes go from 1 to 1:45? These are some of the things that I've had to do. Now, this can come off as moralism. Okay, wow, you're kind of like really restrictive and weird because you read this forum or you watch Instagram or something. The reason why I do that is because it's obscuring. I just gave you an example when I'm talking to other people, but it also obscures how I relate to and delight in my creator. This is not obvious. This is not overt. It's not like I read 7 posts from my forum and all of a sudden I'm an atheist. It's nothing like that. Of course not. But I tell you what it is, how it really does work. The thing that I pant for, like a deer pants for water in the morning, is not his scriptures. It's to read my forum. So I have to untether and say, no, this is your real water. Because otherwise, if I did exactly what I wanted every morning, those algorithms are serving up new posts to me because it knows that I'm going to read them and knows that I want to read them in order to say, no, heart, you need God's word more. I have to say, I'm not going to drink from that water right now. Now, you have to be different in some way. But you have something like that, or many things like that. I could go on. My list is pretty long. But we have to be sober as Christians because everything's a mixed bag. We can celebrate it, and then we can fast from it. That's how complex the Christian worldview is. And if we want to keep God at the center, that's what we have to do. Okay. Questions or comments on that? Okay, conversational AI. So I shared with you last week how this really, really disappointing event happened with the sale of our house in Houston. Short recap, God was opening up like 15 doors. He opened up for us to come here, and we're so glad that he did. Closed other doors. The last door he opened, our house was going to sell in this crazy market, in this buyer's market. And then it didn't. It was so devastating to us. The first thing that I do in response to this is strategize for 2 hours with AI of how to get this house sold. Now, you already know from what I've said, is getting that kind of data and that strategy and learning the market, is that a bad thing from this great piece of large language model that we have? Of course it's not bad. That's great. That's great. But that was my first response. That was my very first response. It wasn't even to talk to Katie about it. Katie's my wife. It wasn't even to talk to my wife about it. And it certainly wasn't, God, I don't know why you're doing this, but we're going to still follow you, even though this like pretty big financial hit on us has occurred. So with that kind of using as an example, I've noticed that I've gotten too conversational with conversational AI. Okay. Here are some of the, this is maybe not you, but maybe this is something like you, and I'm just going to tell you some things that I have done. AI is not neutral. It is a habit-forming piece of glorious technology. And it is training. There's even data out on this now that are like 2 years old. Even the way that people are talking to one another is changing based on, because they're talking to conversational AI more than they are humans. Okay. Now, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, is the verdict still out? Maybe it's helping our grammar. Doubt it, but hey, maybe it could. But we know it's not simply something on a silver platter without any drawbacks, because we live in a fallen creation. So everything's a mixed bag. And I am in that moment, I kind of treated AI as the thing that was going to deliver me from this problem. And as I thought about what is that like, it was like I was treating AI the same sort of request in the Lord's Prayer: forgive us our daily bread. Give us the things that we need in order to get around in life. Very practical things, like we need bread, we need rice. I did not go to God. We need this equity to be unhooked so we can do what you're calling us to. So what I have started to do is similar to smartphone. Prayer time, well, this is what I aspire to do. I am not perfect. Believe me, Joshua, I could tell that already. Okay, good. Prayer time and scripture have to come first, even if it's talking with AI. That's something noble. I've typed things in like great date ideas. What's better than that's great? That's great. Why don't I have good ideas? Well, because I'm a bozo. I don't know. But even before something that is quote unquote noble like that, I need to meet with the real God face to face in his word and in prayer. I've also, this has been something even more recent. Let me, before I get to that, no longer do I look at AI in bed. I found that I don't talk to my wife, who's like literally right there. I just like talk with AI. Now, I don't like, here's my feelings, AI, like Claude, can you like, you know, coddle me? It's nothing like that. It's always strategy. It's always like things I want to build or something, but it's still a conversation. I love to build and tinker things. And I'm always like thinking about that. And I'm like, there's a living person right here. Okay. I've also, this is something more recent. I've also limited AI to procedural and executive functions only, instead of creative. I was talking with Steve about the last night. What I mean is, it's very helpful, and I think it's a glorious piece of goodness that the Creator has given us through AI, that it helps with executive organization. Here are the 7 things I need to do this week. Here are their due dates, and here's when I do them best in my day. Arrange my schedule. I no longer, though, ask AI to help me with my creative output. I want to write this article. Here are 3 ideas. Can you give me some ideas to write on more? So I like to write. Why? Golly, it's like taking both the drudgerous work and the fun work. Like that, the creative work's like the fun work. Also, there's a huge issue of plagiarism. We can get into that later. Also, I have asked it for like conversations, like how can I help me in this relationship? Here's the situation. And I don't have some theological treatise to give you, but there's something off about that. So I'm now restricted. I no longer ask it for those things, even though I know it's polling psychological sites or counseling sites. So obviously these tasks overlap. That's why we need to become wise people before we can use AI wisely. And the third one is Sabbath rest. It was an engineer at Netflix. I would have to pull it up, but this is in the mid 15 or 16, who was saying, you know, now we're basically competing with sleep. Like people are using our services the maximum they can aside from their work or school. And now the buffer, the barrier that we are running up into is like we need to keep them watching longer in the night and rob them of their sleep. Now, obviously, they don't have some sinister plan. They just want usage to go up. Okay, I understand that. The promise of AI is that, excuse me, the promise of technology and innovations is the same kind of promise that was in the garden, which is you can be like God. This is why AI is so popular. This is why companies have even dreamed, and actually some have executed. Who was it? Intuit, a couple years ago, got rid of 40%. Someone told me that.
Weird.
Square, excuse me. Yeah, Square or Block, 40% of their workforce. Other companies have done that, and then they're like, oh, actually, some people come back, and they can't do everything that we've just fired. But you have to create a space where you rest. And resting includes from your interaction with technological devices. This is the way the Smith family does it. We take Sabbath very seriously. It's one of the Ten Commandments. Our Sabbath is on Saturday. It starts on Friday night when I get home from this and ends kind of Sunday morning. Things on Sabbath are not just rest. We are such a product of work culture that you and I think of rest as something you do so that you can work. It's the opposite. We work so that we can rest. Rest is the goal. What was the seventh day? The seventh day was rest. In Jesus, you have your rest, the writer of Hebrews says. Rest is the goal. Now, because you and I define rest in terms of not working, work is the focus. But resting in as the scriptures are actually the focus. And what is rest? An older term, maybe archaic now, is called leisure. Leisure is the activity of doing something that is valuable in itself. Listen to how obscene and absurd this sounds, okay? Joshua, I saw you were going on a walk with Katie. Why are you doing that? Oh, well, she's just like some accessory. I don't really know who she is, but I'm trying to get in shape. Okay. What? Okay, that could be true, but the reason why you go for walks is because you love the person and it's delightful. You don't need any further like goal that you're trying to accomplish. You don't need to instrumentalize, sometimes this is called. Sabbath is the day that you do things that are non-productive and that are good in themselves. How does the Smith family do this? We could have a whole series on Sabbath. How does the Smith family do this? Well, we have a special breakfast on Sabbath. So everybody looks forward to Sabbath, not just because we're not working, but because we are doing the things that are most valuable in life. We have a special breakfast. We have an activity that we all do, typically something pretty physical. I have little kids, so it's playground or we go for a run with them. I love movies. We watch a movie every Sabbath, okay? Just me and my wife. That is, I want to experience beauty and a story. We also get out like delicacies that we don't get out any other week. It's not like caviar. I probably don't even like that. It's not like super expensive, but it's something that we don't eat the rest of the week. We'll have chocolate that night. We'll have some nice drinks. We don't have to eat our vegetables. It's great. And all of this, though, is not just to kind of suit our fancy, but it's because we then turn, especially at the dinner table or maybe at breakfast, and give God thanks, that we turn to Him as only a posture of praise instead of, can you help me with? Because that's what Sabbath is for. And the spirit of innovation is out to get Sabbath rest because it's always going to, but if you push in a little bit more, then you'll be a little bit more productive. You'll get just a little bit more advancement. And God says, no. Even God rests, not because He needs it, but because it's a pattern for us. And it's also when our faith grows. You know how hard it is, especially in our connected kinds of jobs where we can work from anywhere, to say, today I am not opening email. That is an act of faith. that trusting that even if you don't answer those 10 emails, that God is going to keep you in your job, that God is going to provide for you, and that he is going to give you the abundant life that Jesus promised you. It's crazy that taking Sabbath would be so countercultural, but it is. It is, even for Christians, even for Christians. Okay, so I have Job 28, and then on the back, I have some questions about Job 28. Standard fare, we will break up into, I guess, two still. Maybe, yeah, two. Maybe, what's your name, sir?
Daniel.
From Daniel over, y'all can hang out at this table. And then from Eric all the way to Caleb, y'all can kind of huddle up. And less questions. Hopefully that's helpful. And we'll do this for a few minutes, and then I'll close this out. Cool?